Welcome to a brand new episode. You know what this is. It's the Cruise Experience with a guest. What's up, David?
Hey, Brett. How's it going, man?
It's going awesome. Now, part of the fun stuff with the Cruise Experience is that I like to have variety. No episode will be the same. We have all types of guests. I'm glad to finally actually have you on here because a little bit people know you're one of those few people I respect their film knowledge because you watch a lot of movies. We've always talked about these movies here, and they're pretty good shit.
Yeah, I think that definitely you and I, we stay up on the Hollywood buzz, just not, you know, what's in theaters, but, you know, behind the scenes too. Like, you and I, we've had some pretty good in-depth discussions of what works out there and what doesn't work, what's trending, what we think will trend, and what we like. We love and what we don't like and we wish they just never made.
So we're going to start off because the Oscars, for those who don't know, is this Sunday. And I think a big problem is every year the Oscars, they release a list. Obviously, it's become a buzzword now, Oscar snubs. There's some great movies from last year that didn't get the acknowledgement it deserves. Any movies that you've seen that you feel like should have got more appreciation or even more nominations?
Well, I think the big one is, we'll start with, let's just go with the Oscars So White again this year, you know? I think that's one of the first things that we can talk about and just kind of get out the way. So with that, I'll go in with Us. I mean, it's the follow-up to Get Out from Jordan Peele, and, you know, where was that?
I was really shocked because, you know, here's the thing. I'm a huge horror fan. I personally did not love Us. Not because the whole movie is bad, but there was maybe 2-3 key moments that were just threw me for the movie. But, yeah, where was it? You know, it definitely was well acted. It was well shot. The story was there.
I mean, but you could even say, like, you know, maybe he should have gotten maybe another original screenplay credit again, or at least nomination, because I mean, I'll agree with you. It probably wasn't as good as Get Out, or because I think the force that Get Out hit with as his first movie to really set a precedent for him, and I think a lot of us were expecting him to reach that level again. It might not have been there with Us, but at the same time, too, I think it stood out farther than a lot of, not just horror, but other movies for the past year.
For sure. I mean, I think it's a lot of pressure because you're not only a director, but you're an African-American director in a predominantly white Hollywood system. And the fact that you had a successful horror movie, of course, pressure is like, what's next? And I think I don't think that Jordan Peele has reached his prime yet.
No, by no means. By no means.
It's cooking. You can see the potential.
Definitely. I think there's still more to come. Just, I wish I would have seen something of his, for nomination or anything, you know, score, sound editing. Because, I mean, there's a lot of good jumps in that movie, too.
If you would have told me 20 years ago that the guy I watched off Mad TV would be such this big known director now, I would have laughed. But I'm happy for him.
Oh, definitely. I mean, you know, always want to praise someone's success. I mean, we can be as critical as we are, but I mean, I would never want to take anything away from him from his success. You know, there's no sense in being envious of anyone in this business.
Well, now, kind of moving away from snubs, how crazy is it that Joker, it has just racked up the nominations?
I mean, you and me are both the comic book guys, so I can appreciate a comic book movie making it as far as it did. However, do I wish that movie was the Joker? There's a lot of better movies than Joker. I don't know what I've never asked your feelings on Joker. What did you think of it? And then I'll get into mine.
I enjoyed it. I went in, okay, first of all, full disclaimer, Todd Phillips, who directed the movie, mm-hmm. I hate him as a director. nothing personal. Yeah. I find every movie I've ever seen from his, including the Hangover series, to be trash.
Okay.
So when they announced that this guy was taking on this legendary, iconic comic character, I instantly was like, oh, this is going to suck.
Yeah, you were like, oh, shit.
But then I went and saw it, and props to Joaquin Phoenix. By the time the movie, around the middle of the movie, you know when you get that moment when you watch a really, really good movie and you just kind of get lost in the film? Like, you're no longer thinking of, oh, I'm watching a movie. You're just really like, holy shit, you're invested.
Right.
That happened. And it kind of built and built. And I think why it resonates so strongly with a lot of people is that it's almost mirroring the chaotic times of the world right now.
I'll agree with you, but on definitely the mirroring of what's been going on. But I think it was one of probably in my opinion, a poorly written movie. I feel like definitely Joaquin Phoenix carried that movie. Like his Oscar nom for Best Actor, yes, completely well deserved. Best film? No. I'll say no on that. To me, there's been a lot of critique of it and a lot of people who have been saying that this is a angry white man's film, and I'll agree with you on that. I'll agree with them on that. That to me, this film reeks a lot of entitlement into it. We could get into the politics of that, some other time. But like, there's just so much that is wrong with that film. To really merit it. How when this movie first started getting the buzz and everyone's like, oh, man, this is going to be bad. It's going to be like a new Aurora, you know, what happened with The Dark Knight and everything. I went in like kind of maybe my eyes or maybe my mind have been just too aware of the film, and just everything to me just felt like it was just so, why is this happening? You know, this is just like, it's a very predictive film to me, and that's why I don't think it should be, at least nominated for a lot of the awards at the beginning. Best directing, no. Best writing, no. If anything, Joaquin Phoenix just deserves everything himself. I would not give anything else beyond that for that film.
And see, I think those are strong words. To look through it, I totally see the angry white male level on it.
Oh, dude, yeah.
But to unpeel it back, I think it also does a good job of kind of showcasing, and I think it hit home with me a little bit, because for people of lower income who have mental health issues or goes somewhere for like therapy and those programs get cut, it kind of opens up the floodgates. Those people you still have to deal with.
They still for sure. And I think if anything, that's what to take away from the film, is that without the funding for these programs, you get characters like the Joker, like Arthur Fleck, and who have nothing to do but lash out. But to say that because he's, his lash outs are justified, or that you feel you're able to relate to the character in that way, I mean, what does that really say more about yourself? I think what I take away from this film is that if you are agreeing with a lot of the choices Arthur Fleck, the Joker, is making in the film, I think you should really take a look at what you are seeing in yourself and then proceed from there. If you feel like you need to get help therapy, by all means, go for it. And I think the bigger issue then is that the availability of said resources, because that's what the film deals with. He loses the therapist and then he just goes on the rampage. And I think that it shows more of a need for that, if anything.
And definitely shown he had I believe it's called the dissociative order, where he would imagine things like earlier, Zazie Beetz' character, he imagined them in this relationship that wasn't even real. And
oh, dude, don't even get me started on Zazie Beetz' character, because, oh, what such a waste. I felt like such a waste of a character. An actor. I'm like an actress, she's phenomenal in Atlanta. Deadpool 2. I mean, and she's just, she's almost thrown into, like, I mean, comic book term here, you know, refrigerator girlfriend to some degree. Because we don't, does it ever really resolve what happens with her? You know, like, spoilers.
But see, and that's the thing. Like, I'm curious because, one, this whole talk about a potential sequel, my head's kind of scratching, like, does she get brought back? Does she have a large role? Because I agree with you. If the sole purpose was just to have some creepy love interest, waste of Zazie Beetz.
Yeah.
But if the goal is that there's some long-term plan in motion for her to reappear in, whether it's the rumor it was a Harley Quinn, I'd be for it. I'd be curious to see. But here's the thing. Have you ever read the book, The Killing Joke?
Yeah, I've read the book, and I've seen the animated feature that they did too on it.
And that's what I took of the Joker. Like, when I watched it, all I could think of was the book, The Killing Joke, because the one bad day reduces a man to what, the sanest lunacy, something to that. I'm sure I'm butchering the phrase, but that whole arcing theme about trying to turn a man mad,
yeah,
I think is what we saw in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what I gotta say, I would give it a special effect because Robert De Niro was awesome, as usual.
Yeah, but even then, he's used minimally, which, I mean, for a lot of the people that they build in this movie, Joaquin Phoenix, Robert De Niro, Zazie Beetz, Marc Maron, Brian Tree Henry, they are all used very minimally, except with the exception of Joaquin Phoenix, because it's his film, let's be honest. And I'll say it again, he carries the film for me. Without him, I wouldn't even bother with this film. But they build all these great actors, and, like, I think there was some, like, at least initial buzz about, hey, look, you got all these great actors, and there's also these great black actors too, but then they're not used to any meaningful degree.
Well, of course not. It's DC. They haven't got to the Marvel level yet. You know I'm going to do a DC shot, obviously. I mean,
yeah, for sure.
Like Marvel they have Black Widow coming out. They have Captain Marvel came out. They have Gamora and Guardians. And then DC is like, you know, we're going to release a Harley Quinn movie this month, because fuck being late for 3 years.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah. I think Joker, I think it's going to win a lot of awards. But my biggest beef with it is that I don't think it's the best comic movie that deserves an Oscar.
Oh, for sure.
Because I really feel like Logan got robbed hardcore.
I mean, I absolutely love Logan. I'm completely biased. So Wolverine is my favorite hero of all time. So I couldn't agree with you more on that. I've got the special edition, you know, the one that's black and white, you know.
Same here.
I mean, because there was no other way to really watch that movie. Along with the, you know, like Mad Max, that they just decided to do let's release the theatrical version and then the black and white version. And you know, not a lot of films can do a seamless transition between color and black and white like either of those films can. I mean, if you were to try and do the same with Joker, fall on his face.
Oh, agreed. I think long term, I feel like DC is going to take all this buzz Joker has garnered, his nominations. I think they're going to experiment more with releasing solo movies versus trying to do what Marvel does and interconnect their whole galaxy, their comic book, their comic movies. I think that might be actually a pretty good idea.
I don't think it's a bad idea, but I think they're going to swing towards that continuity at least, because at least right now it feels like they've done a lot. They're almost doing it backwards to some degree, where they've done the Justice League movie, and now they're giving each hero their own thing. Like, the Flash movie with Ezra Miller, or not? Yeah, is it Ezra Miller?
Yeah, Ezra Miller.
Yeah. That's happening. And for a long time, everyone's like, okay, change of director, you know, another change in director, new writer and everything. And now that's moving forward. I mean, we just saw him in the Crisis crossover on TV, and that, I mean, completely, you know, revitalized, I feel like, an idea for continuity, at least with DC.
And I think that was really cool that they did that. It's rare to do a movie star crossing over a TV show, and I'm glad they did that. I think that's a nice nod to everybody who's kept up watching that show for, what, 5, 8, maybe 10 years now?
Well, at least 7 years, because Arrow is finished up, and they finished on 7, which, I'll ask you, I don't know if you've kept up with them, but if you have, are you going to continue beyond past Arrow now that Arrow is done with?
And see, I don't know, because I'm in a really weird place with the DC CW shows. Do you remember when Marvel made TV shows back in the 80s?
I remember the shows. I mean, I'm a 90s kid, so it's not really – I wasn't around then, but I know the shows, yes.
Like live-action Spider-Man, yeah. You can see a little. Yeah. That's how I feel DC CW shows are. Not necessarily in quality or production, and just I don't feel like I'm watching the best version of what can be done.
I feel like there's a definite oversaturation with them. I don't have cable, so I don't really watch the current season. I'm always a season behind, but I have my Netflix, so I keep up with it. And so when I'm trying to do the watch order for everything, I kind of see where the first episode of the big crossover is for the season, and I try to plan accordingly. So like maybe my rotation's like Arrow, Flash, Legends, and what's the other one?
Supergirl.
A point of oversaturation. Oh, Supergirl. That's what it is.
Isn't there a Batwoman too?
Yeah, now there's Batwoman. Okay.
Shit,
yeah.
There's so many.
But my point being that when I'm trying to, you know, keep up with this stuff, when I'm in that rotation, it's just like it's arduous, you know, it's to some degree, because it's like I'm not the biggest fan of Green Arrow. Flash, to me, the quality of the show is deeply diminished.
A lot of people say that.
Supergirl has picked up tremendously, at least in the current Netflix season. Again, I don't have cable, so I don't watch whatever the current TV season is. But, man, just what's on Netflix? Holy crap! It's so relevant. Just so it went totally political, and it completely works for the show. But Legends of Tomorrow is by far my favorite because they're just having fun. It's just a fun TV show. If you're gonna watch one of those four shows, there's Black Lightning too, but it was finally brought in to the continuity with Crisis. But if you're going to watch one, Legends of Tomorrow is by far the one I pick. It's just fun. It's good. It knows how to make the most out of less, and then better than any of the other shows.
Well, let me say this. I'm going to call it now. With the whole DC Network app or DC Universe app, whatever the hell they call it, I can see them putting out more experimental shows. I'm going to say we're going to see a Green Lantern, a Jon Stewart Green Lantern.
But see, live action. We have that coming, but that's coming from HBO Max. And let's like...
Wait, what? Rewind?
Yeah, you didn't know that? Yeah.
No, no, you're just breaking some news to me, David. Don't play with me.
Yeah. It's going to be, they said it's going to be for HBO Max. It's going to be like a Green Lantern Corps series.
So... See, every time I'm trying to save money and not get another goddamn streaming service.
So wait, for those listening out there, if you already have your HBO Go, HBO Plus, whatever it is, the current HBO subscription, it should upgrade automatically. But it upgrades automatically, I think, 2 or 3 months after the initial release is how it goes. So you might have to wait a little bit, but you'll get there eventually.
I'm going to invest. I mean, speaking of HBO, I heard the Watchmen series on there has been phenomenal.
Oh, my God. Yes. I mean, okay. For Damian Lindelof, a guy who my first kind of introduction to his work was Lost. I think that's a lot for most people. And to see almost how convoluted Lost was to some degree.
I heard it was a lot of angles.
And to see like his work become more and more streamlined. I don't know if you watched Leftovers at all, but that's an HBO series I love. I just don't know if it's the method to his work now, but Lost started out with this big mystery and the mystery kept going and going until everyone got tired of it. And then it finished up. The Leftovers worked the same way, but rather than drag the mystery on, he did it in 3 seasons, said, all right, that's it, we're done. With Watchmen, he said, 1 season, that's all I need. And that's what it was. I mean, you could not find, you'd be hard pressed to find a better season, a 1 season show of TV that didn't end how it should have.
Well, following up with that, here's one for you. Last decade, last, 20 years, whatever you want to go here.
Okay.
What's a show that you originally looked at, maybe saw a commercial of and said, that's freaking stupid, I don't want to watch it. And then maybe one day you caved, you watched a few episodes and got hooked.
You know what, for me, it was Clone Wars.
Really?
I'm a huge Star Wars fan. I love Star Wars to the nth degree. But there was something about Clone Wars from the beginning that just put me off. I think it was because what it was is that you had this 3D stuff that looked cartoony. Like, you know, like it was trying, like it looked too cartoony to try and be what it was. And we had just about 2 years, 2-3 years earlier, we had the amazing Genndy Tartakovsky's Clone Wars animated series that was phenomenal. I don't know if you've seen it or not. It's on YouTube, I know for sure, but I went out and got the DVDs for it because that was like the standard of a Star Wars TV show, you know, for me. And I saw Clone Wars at first. I'm like, this is not what I want to see or what I really care about. And I didn't get into it until the second to last season when there was like all this like preview of Darth Maul and everything. I'm like, okay, Darth Maul's in this. I'm going to give this a whirl. And at that point, I had learned that the release of Clone Wars, the episodes on TV, was deeply, deeply flawed by what Cartoon Network wanted Dave Filoni, the creator, to release. And it totally screws up the entire timeline. If you actually go on StarWars.com, they give you the proper chronological order of the series, and I can't highly recommend that you watch the series in that order. If you try and watch it just, you know, episode by episode on Netflix or Disney Plus, it's just not going to do it for you. So you have to watch it in chronological episode as order. But I went on a limb again and started watching it, and I got hooked so hard. For me, what makes that show is the clones. I'm a big clone guy. The one Star Wars book novel series that I absolutely love is the Republic Commando series by Karen Travis, who she's done some other great works too for Star Wars, and I think she even did a couple of the Halo books. But if you want to know about like clone life, or even if you are, you know, with the success of the Mandalorian culture, it's all in those series. And for me, the clones are what sold that entire series. I could give two craps about Jedi Obi-Wan. Yeah, they're Jedi. We know they're gonna make it through, at least through to Revenge of the Sith. But it's the clones that kept me coming back for me to the series.
And there's a lot of shit in Star Wars. I mean, you can have so much content. As a kid, I remember I used to like get the books, and I never went down the rabbit hole and became a super Star Wars fan. But I do appreciate the fandom and the people who are like fuck with it, especially the everlasting Star Wars Star Trek beef.
Yeah,
that seems to never go away. But yo, for me, it was weird. It was like, I think the show I watched that really just I thought was stupid was King of the Hill.
Yeah,
I thought it was the dumbest shit that I've ever seen. And I was like, no way. And I watched the episode where I think it's called Bobby Goes Nuts, where He moves into
the, that's not, I don't know you. Let go of my purse.
My purse. And I was, few things have I've watched that's actually made me cry. Cry of laughter. And when his dad was like, give me the video. And he gets like kicked straight in the nuts. I think he's trying to help Bobby box. And he goes, bah! I watched it. I've watched all 13 seasons of King of the Hill. I think it's such an underrated cartoon because people look at animation and they think that it's going to be some hardcore, conservative, spewing, like whites or some shit to that effect. But it's a very self-aware, self-deprecating show. Yeah, it's awesome.
Here, I'm going to pose a question to you now. Mm-hmm. What's a series that you got hooked on initially that no one else did, and then pop culture caught on, you know, with you and, you know, became a big fandom?
Ooh. That's a tough one. Mm, I kind of almost want to say Batman Beyond.
Okay, yeah, definitely.
Because at first, you know, I don't know, until like 2-3 episodes in, I'm like, this is some good shit. And being young, people were like, nah, man, ain't the real Batman. That shit's going to be stupid. And here we are, like, still talking about the awesomeness of that animation. What? For I think sure. It came out in 99, 97, maybe?
I think it was later than that, actually, because I'm a huge fan of the series, too. I've got all three on DVD. A couple years ago, when Will Friedle came to Motor City Comic Con, I had him actually sign my season one because, I mean, I love the show too. But I think for me, what also kind of like sold the show for the non-believers was that it tied into the animated series. You know, it was the, if you love the animated series, it was almost a great 3-season epilogue.
Oh, for sure. It was a great homage. Like, you have a nice wrap-up of the Batman showed, I think that's on the WB at the time.
Yeah.
Then you have Batman Beyond that says, hey, we're going to jump in the future and here's what it is. And what always got me about those shows, Batman, the animated series, and Batman Beyond, is that they weren't afraid to really go into heavier topics. Like, I don't know if you remember, was it Terry McGinnis, his father is murdered in the first episode or the second episode. And I'm like 7 or 8, and I'm like, fuck. This is some deep shit.
For sure.
You know, nowadays, I don't think they even show bullets on cartoons nowadays. I think everything's pretty.
You know, I looked into this because some of my other friends who are into comic books, they're older guys, so they kind of educated me on some of this stuff. So I think it's the FCC regulation that you can't, in animation, you can't show bullets killing someone. So for these 90s shows that you and I grew up with, like X-Men, Spider-Man, if you look, or if you, you know, really pay attention, what they shoot at Spider-Man or the X-Men, it's not bullets, it's like laser beams. And because if they ever got hit, they got hit with a laser. They didn't get hit with a bullet, and it was like, it's not death, it's you got hit with a laser. It's kind of weird to think about that now, how they were aware of what kids were watching to some degree.
But check this, when Batman went to WB, and maybe my mind's a little fuzzy here, but I swear the Joker shot him with a gun and he was bleeding.
Okay, but was it a bullet though? Like, he might have shot him, but that's the thing. That's like the stipulation. You can get shot, but it can't be by a bullet. Like, a gun could
feel like it was a bullet. I feel like I only bring this up because I remember being traumatized at like 10, where I was like, oh my God, because Batman's bleeding. And I think he Joker kicks him off like a train track or something. He falls in like dumpsters. And that threw me, because when it was on Fox, it was still going to a reasonable teenage level. Went into the WB. I feel like they, maybe because they just own it, you're on our network now, so we can just open up the gates. But do you remember the Mad Love episode where like Joker slaps the shit out of Harley and throws her out a window?
So I do, but I also have the comic, the comic that spun it. Well, actually the episode came first, and then the comic, I think, is how it went. But yeah, I know exactly the one you're talking about.
And you know, as a kid, it's like, fuck, you know, it's my first introduction to domestic abuse on an animation.
Yeah, but, definitely. Yeah. That, I think that pretty much sums up. It was like an after school special, but Batman related? Batman-y?
Yeah, Batman related. Well, speaking of Batman and segueing more into comics here, you know, I feel like with comic books, we all have that book, that moment, that issue that we read, and we're like, you know what? I'm sold. I'm here. I'm a fan. What would you say was that moment for you?
A particular issue. When I was young, I wouldn't say there was one issue that got me into comics. I read when I was a kid, mainly because my dad bought me a bunch of comics. He mostly read like Batman when he was a kid, and then like he got me like the old school, well, not old school, but like old Disney adventure comics, like Uncle Scrooge Tales or Donald Duck Tales, like that stuff. And like that's for the most part what kind of kept my interest in comics. I'd say what it wasn't until like later on, was about 15, 16, for me, the issue that sold me on comics was Marvel's event, Annihilation. And I don't know what it was about that. I was just like, I saw the cover and I had like this, like, I loved the series is so good. But the prologue cover, it's like Nova, Drax, and like there's all these other like cosmic heroes, like Silver Surfer and Super Scroll are on there too. Everyone who is going to be part of like the character miniseries that would lead into the Annihilation actual series book. And I'm just like, this is like so interesting. This is like different than anything I've really seen before, and I want to get into this. And I read the prologue, and I was hooked from there. And that's where I started regularly buying. And I had my first pull from a comic shop from there. I was getting probably Marvel at least every other week. And probably, I think it wasn't the largest, the most money I'd spent on comics monthly. But it's what started it for me.
See, for me, comics have been to me like almost alcoholism. Because every time I think I give it up, it brings me back. And I've been saying this shit since I was like 5. kind of similar to you. My uncle bought me a lot of comics, and he would buy me Marvel, like Spider-Man, X-Men. And then eventually that stopped. And then I got into the Batman animated series and then jumped to DC for a bit, where I was reading a bunch of Batman. And then I stopped. I stopped maybe because the comic shop closed, so I had no way of getting these comics anymore. So from 10 till about 15, I think I came back to Marvel when Brian Michael Bendis was writing, I think, Avengers and New Avengers. And
yeah, he kind of was having. Yeah, that was around the same time, too, for Annihilation. And Bendis's Avengers, I have Bendis's New Avengers, I have the complete run of that.
And that shit was good. And I mean, even with that, like Marvel was really clicking in a lot of different areas, because I think it was, I might butcher this name, Kieran Gillen. I think it was writing Uncanny X-Men.
Kieran Gillen? Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. And Slott was writing Spider-Man, even though I dislike most of Slott's run in Spider-Man. It was just a nice mix of everything was hitting. Daniel Way was writing Deadpool. So I came back at the perfect time when, to me, Marvel was hitting its renaissance in the mid-2000s, where all their books were clicking.
So like that's like right about there where I started. And then for me, the end of when like I had, like, you know, we were in college at the time, I couldn't afford, you know, $100 a month of comic books, essentially.
You got to earn it, David. You got to make it a sacrifice, like I did.
Okay. At the time, I wasn't willing to do that, but I couldn't afford a $100 a month pull. So I stopped reading for the most part, and it was actually it's probably the worst thing I could do. Not because I couldn't afford it, but because probably my favorite contemporary writer, Jonathan Hickman, that's when he finished his Fantastic Four run to start his Avengers New Avengers run, which leads into, 2016, 2017, yep. Secret Wars.
I just read that 2 weeks ago.
Oh man. What a series.
See.
And now we're into Hickman's take on X-Men, and oh my god, he's just put the, I don't know if you've been able to read or catch up with it or not, but read it, but he's put his foot on the pedal and just said X-Men are the new bosses in Marvel, and y'all better just get used to it.
I love it. I love that. See, and here's my opinion. Marvel said, Hickman, write Secret Wars. It's phenomenal. Now go take 3-4 years off and rebirth X-Men. And this motherfucker came back. And I got Marvel Unlimited Comics, their comic reading website.
Yeah.
And I just started getting into a little bit of their first two issues of that. Another good one I got into was Immortal Hulk. I think Danny Coates. No, I don't know. Actually, I think it's Al Ewing who writes that book.
Yeah, it's Ewing. Yeah, Ewing's got it.
And it's 5 stars. I'm 20 issues into Immortal Hulk. And I think between that, Hickman's X-Men, Donny Coates' Venom, Marvel is seeing again a renaissance of their books actually starting to become good. I'm not sure if they're DC good yet, because DC's been on fire for a little bit.
Honestly, the only thing I've kept up with DC in the last probably 2-3 years has been Batman, Snyder's run on Batman, and even Tom King's run on Batman. And those have been stellar as well. But I mean, beyond that, at least for me, there's nothing that I was like, I have to read this now too. Even like in that Marvel Renaissance in the mid 2000s, we had Geoff Johns' Green Lantern, and I've got a couple trades of it, and a lot of issues, but it's not something that I keep displayed. Like, I've got certain books, issues, trades displayed throughout my apartment, and it's not something that's just prominent where you can see. Just looking around right now, I've got like Uncanny X-Men, New Avengers, Cap, X-Factor, Fantastic Four. That's just the Marvel side. Oh, Iron Fist, all the Annihilation Cosmic Series, all those things. I'm really a Marvel guy, but then I've got some like Image stuff, like Scalped, DC stuff. I've got, but it's mostly Watchmen. So it's like Alan, initially Alan Moore stuff, but then like a couple of the Before Watchmen series and Doomsday Clock, which that was at least the first. I haven't read that completely, but the first volume I picked up from Books a Million, and that's been good so far.
Yeah, there's been a lot of good stuff out. I mean, I'm proud to say I've got back to Marvel. I reread Secret Wars. I mean, I actually never had an opportunity to read Hickman's Fantastic Four, so I'm going back now and reading and catching up on that. I just reread New Avengers, Hickman's New Avengers, and that's primo writing. But hey, we're about to wrap up here, David. I mean,
next time you're on, I'll have to give you my or next time you and I talk in person, I'll have to run you through my Fantastic Four movie script. I spec my spec script, because we're almost in time for a Fantastic Four reboot and X-Men reboot with the MCU, phase four coming up. And I took a lot from Hickman's work and some other Fantastic Four stories, but it's definitely something you and I should definitely talk and share about. Maybe not, but like you and I, person, mano a mano.
Hell yeah, I'm about it. By the way, Disney, if you're hearing this, pay us. We got a script going. We're trying to retire tomorrow. Shit. But David, thank you again for coming on the show.
Hey, appreciate it. Anytime.
You take it easy, man. Any last words you want to say to our audience, our viewers out there?
Just quote Stan Lee, Excelsior.
Oh, perfect way to end it.